When Mutata was gone, Sean devoted the last hour of daylight to watching the gunships return out of the north. There were 11 of them, ample proof of the efficiency of the Russian maintenance crews, who must have repaired the two Hinds that Mutata had reported were not flying. The entire squadron, less the single gunship that Sean had knocked out of the sky, was once again operational and doing dreadful execution among the Renamo guerrillas. As each gunship hovered above the hillock and then settled into its emplacement, Sean pointed out the flying characteristics to his section leaders and urged them to mark well the exact position of each emplacement. "That one is yours, Tendila." He reinforced the target allocations. "See how he stands in the sky? You will shoot from that clump of dark trees at the edge of the flay. Have you marked it well?" "I have marked it, Nkosi Kakulu," they affirmed. The sky was washed by the blood of the dying day, and as he watched the red orb sink away beneath the trees, Sean wondered how much more blood the dawn would bring. There was that short period of African twilight, during which it was not yet dark enough to move off the ridge. There was nothing further to discuss, and Sean and Alfonso sat close together. The feeling was so familiar. No matter how many times Sean waited like this, he would never be able to control or ignore the tension that pulled like rubber bands across his guts. It was the heady anticipation of the draught of terror, which soon he would drink to its dregs. He longed for it, as the addict does for the needle, and dreaded it to the limits of his soul. "We will make a good kill," Alfonso said quietly. "It will be a fight for men who are truly men." Sean nodded. "Yes, my friend, it will be a good fight. And if we fail, then you must try to kill me. That also will be a good fight." "We will see," Alfonso growled, his eyes reflecting the smoky red glare of the sunset. "Yes, we will see." The crisp silhouette of the hill on which the Hinds were lagered dissolved with the onset of night. Then Venus appeared as the evening star, and its cold, unwavering light burned directly above the hilltop, seeming to single it out for them. Within the first hour of darkness, the leading troopers of the raiding column emerged from the trees behind them. Job was at the head of the column, with Mutata guiding him and Claudia beside him. Sean met them with a quiet word and immediately began to marshal the troopers into their various units. The section leaders took charge of their missile teams, and the Stinger launchers were unpacked and assembled. The spare missiles in their sealed, frangible tubes were checked and readied. Sean and Job and Claudia went from team to team, running the final checks on the missile launchers, making certain that the battery packs were fully charged and correctly connected, that the cylinders of freon gas were open-valved, and that the sighting screens illuminated when the actuator was engaged. At last, Sean was ready to deploy the missile teams. But before he did so, he called the section leaders together and, for the last time, made each repeat his orders. Satisfied at last, he began to dispatch them to their attack positions. He allowed 5-minute intervals between each team leaving the ridge. Alfonso was in charge of the missile teams attacking the eastern perimeter of the lager, and because he had farther to go to get into position, he left first. When it was time for Job, who would lead the missile attack on the western perimeter, to go, he and Sean shook hands briefly. There was no exchange of good wishes. They were both superstitious about that. Instead, Job asked facetiously, "Listen, Sean, about that $4,000 in bonus and back pay. Don't you want to pay me out now?" "Will you take a check?" Sean grinned at him through the dark mask of his camouflage cream. Job answered his grin, punched his shoulder, and moved away out of earshot so that Sean could speak to Claudia in private. "I don't want to leave you," she whispered, and Sean hugged her fiercely. "Stay close to Job," he ordered.
"Come back to me safely."
"Yes."
"Promise me."
"I promise," he said. And she pulled out of his embrace and turned away, disappearing into the darkness after Job. Sean stared after her. He found that his hands were trembling. He thrust them into his pockets and clenched his fists. Love doesn't do much for one's fighting instincts, he thought, and tried to dismiss her from his mind. She'd be all right with Job. The assault party was waiting for him patiently, squatting at the edge of the tree line. 24 men, the cannon fodder, the meat bombs, he thought ruefully, those who had failed the aptitude tests for operating the stingers. While the missile crews would fire from standoff positions 500 metres outside the perimeter of the lager, the assault party would attack it head-on and frontal, deliberately drawing fire while trying to flush the Hinds up into the air for the missile gunners to get a fair shot at them. It was this unit who would meet the 12.7mm cannons in their fortified positions and all the other dangers and obstacles which certainly guarded the lager. Theirs was the most dangerous task, and for that reason alone, Sean could not delegate the command of them to another. He would lead them in. "Come on, Motatu," he said quietly. When there was real danger at hand, wounded game in thick cover or an enemy position to attack, Matatu's self-chosen place was always at Sean's side. Nothing could dislodge him from it. As a mark of his esteem, Alfonso had presented Sean with an AKM assault rifle, the improved and updated version of the ubiquitous AK-47, which was much prized and sought after by the Renamo guerrillas. Sean carried this weapon now as he led the assault team down off the ridge, and with Matatu guiding them through the night, circled out to get in between the main railway line and the lager, as close as was prudent, to the spur of the line on which the railway fuel tanker stood. There was no urgency. They had all night in which to get into position. So they went with a stealth which increased the closer they came to the enemy positions. It was after 2 o'clock in the morning, and the small slice of moon had set before Sean had them in their jump-off positions, spread out at precise intervals, so that at his command they could sweep forward in skirmishing formation. He made one final inspection of their dispositions, crawling silently from man to man, personally sighting in the 60mm M4 commando mortars for them, by sense of touch alone checking their equipment, making absolutely certain that each of them clearly understood his objective, and then leaving them with a whisper of encouragement and a brief but firm clasp of the shoulder. At last, with everything done that could be done, he settled down to wait. This was always the worst and the best part of the hunt. As he lay in the silence, he wondered how much of his life he had spent like this, waiting for it to begin, waiting for shooting light, waiting in the blind for that breath-stopping moment when the leopard appeared with magical suddenness in the bait tree, an elegant silhouette against the pale backdrop of the dawn. His mind went back, over the years, to those other adventures and wild endeavours, to the terrible risks and almost unbearable thrills. And suddenly it dawned upon him that this was probably the last time it would happen. He was over 40 years of age, and Claudia Montero had entered his life. It was time for it to change. There was a sadness, and at the same time, a satisfaction in that thought. Let the last be the best of all the game, he thought. And in the utter darkness of pre-dawn, he heard a sound at once both thrilling and terrifying. The shrill, high whine of a mighty turbo engine, howling like a man-eating wolf in the night. It was joined almost at once by another, and then another. The Hind squadron was starting engines, warming up for the first sortie in the dawn. Sean checked his watch, and the luminous dial showed 5:11. It was almost time. Without thinking, he unclipped the curved banana magazine from under the AKM rifle and replaced it with another from the pouch of spare magazines on his webbing. That habitual gesture gave him the comfort of long familiarity. And beside him, Matatu, seeing him do it, stirred expectantly. The dawn wind came softly as a lover and stroked Sean's cheek. He turned his head towards the east and held up his hand with fingers spread. He could just make out the silhouette of his fingers against the coming dawn. It was what the Matabele called the time of the horns, when a herdsman could first see the horns of his cattle against the sky. Shooting light in 10 minutes, Sean reminded himself, and knew how long it would take those minutes to pass. One after the other, the hinds shut down their engines to an idle. The ground crews would be completing the refueling and rearming. The flying crews would be going aboard. Sean had to judge it exactly. The light must be just right. The hinds would probably not use landing lights, and missile gunners must be able to see them clearly against the dawn. The light bloomed swiftly. Sean closed his eyes and counted slowly to 10 before he opened them again. Now he could make out the stark outline of the crest of the hill, like a cutout in black cardboard. The lacework of the msasa trees stood out against the purple sky, swaying gracefully to the dawn breeze. "Shoot," he said, and tapped the shoulder of the mortar man beside him. The trooper leaned forward, holding the mortar bomb in both hands, and dropped it into the mouth of the mortar tube. The charge in the tail ignited, and with a polite pop, hurled the signal bomb 500 feet into the sky above the hilltop. It exploded in a twinkling red flare of lights. Claudia Montero followed Job down off the ridge, keeping so close behind him that she need only reach out her hand to touch him. Job carried one of the missile launchers across his shoulders, and behind Claudia, the number 2 of their team was bowed beneath the weight of the spare rocket tubes. The footing was loose and dangerous, while quartz pebbles as treacherous as ball bearings rolled underfoot. It pleased her that she was as steady and sure-footed as any of them over this difficult ground. Nevertheless, she was sweating in the night chill as they reached the bottom of the slope and crept forward towards the perimeter of the laager. There was a time, only a few short weeks ago, when she would have felt inept and awkward in these circumstances. But now she orientated herself by the beacon of the evening star above the hilltop and responded instantly to Job's signals, picking her footfalls and anti-tracking almost instinctively. They reached the dense copse of trees, which was their attack position, and crept in amongst them. Claudia helped Job set up the stinger ready for firing, and then found herself a comfortable perch at the base of one of the trees to wait out the night. Job left her there, with just the Shangani number 2 loader for company, and he disappeared into the darkness like a hunting leopard. She was unhappy to see him go. But not long ago she would have been panic-stricken. She realized what a measure of self-reliance and fortitude she had been forced to learn in these last few weeks. "Papa will be proud of me," she smiled to herself, using the future tense as though her father still existed. "Of course he does," she assured herself. "He's still out there somewhere looking out for me. How else would I have made it this far?" His memory was a comfort, and as she thought about him, he became confused in her mind with Sean, so that they seemed to merge into a single entity, as though her father had somehow achieved a new existence in her lover. It was a good feeling that alleviated her loneliness, until suddenly Job returned as silently and abruptly as he had left. "All the other sections are in position," he whispered as he settled down beside her. "But it's going to be a long night. Try and get some sleep."
"I'll never be able to sleep," she answered, keeping her voice so low that he had to lean close to her to catch the words. "Tell me about Sean Courtney. I want to know everything you know about him."